Welcome to the Kings of Sport, the program that's changing the game one show at a time. With your hosts, Nate Milton.
Yes! That boy's good.
And Marcus Vandenberg.
Let's say!
So sit back and relax, because you're now down with the Kings. And welcome to the Kings of Sport, the program changing the game one show at a time, a.k.a. the world's most dangerous sports show, a.k.a. iTunes' longest-running weekly episodic program produced and hosted by two or more African-Americans who are not affiliated with a major network. We have a big show for you guys and girls this week. Not only are we going to talk about the NBA playoffs, not only are we going to talk about the NFL, it is back, Marcus. Football is back. But I'm sure we'll have some other crazy stories to get into this week as well. So let me bring in my tag team partner, ladies and gentlemen, while somebody's trying to call me. I don't recognize that number. Maybe it's might be Skip Bayless, because spoiler alert, I might say something derogatory about Skip Bayless this week.
go for it.
Skip Bayless is trying to call me. No, let me bring in my tag team partner from Southern California. If you can see him amidst all the smoke in the air, ladies and gentlemen, let's bring in Marcus. The Rams are 1-0, Vandenberg. How you doing, brother?
So as you were doing your intro, I started smiling because I just realized the shirt I'm wearing today, I didn't do this to troll you, Nate.
We'll speak on that.
Wearing a Seattle Seahawks shirt. As Nate knows, that the Falcons were no match for Russell Wilson and the Seahawks.
Hold on, Marcus. My bad. I forgot. This is my fault, ladies and gentlemen, whether you're watching on the video or you're listening on the audio podcast. I forgot how we're supposed to start the show, Marcus. So if you don't mind and the audience don't mind, let's take a moment and respectfully acknowledge the Negro National Anthem. Lift every voice and sing till earth and heaven ring. Like, okay, here's the question, Marcus, because I know our white brothers and sisters probably don't know all the words to the song. How far can you get in the song without her? Because I had to look at my phone for some of the verses going down. Like, how much of Lift Every Voice to Sing do you know besides Lift Every Voice to Sing?
The second stanza on, I have no idea of the words.
You know,
we had to go.
Sing a song. Full of the faith that the dark has. I don't think anybody under the age of 50 knows the second verse besides Bomani Jones.
Yes.
Because Bo was on Levitard last week talking about how he it's one of his favorites. Favorite songs, and he knows all the verses. And I barely can get out of the first verse, Marcus.
I haven't heard Lift Every Voice since elementary school, maybe.
I've heard it more recent than that, just because I've, you know, my father being a pastor, like we've been in those, particularly during February or. Mm-hmm. On MLK Day, you know, we gotta take it back to Lift Every Voice and Sing. But it's been a minute since I've heard the song too.
Obama's inauguration, they played it.
Yeah.
That's an appropriate place to play it, right?
Yeah.
I was there for that. So maybe no wait.
So yeah, let's start NFL, Marcus, because I was gonna start with the NBA, but let's since we're here with Lift Every Voice and Sing, let's start with the NFL. And before we even talk about what happened between the lines, Marcus, how do you feel the National Football League did in terms of dealing with the elephant in the room and recognizing what's going on right now in America when it comes to race?
I would give it a C+. I mean, you know, it even the anthem, they played that like what, 20 minutes before kickoff, 30. I mean, it wasn't, you know, I was expecting sort of a person singing at each stadium, or at least a recording, the same Alicia Keys video that they, you know, I've seen that video 3 times now, and I'm sure we'll see it tonight on.
I was gonna say, like, how did they pick that video? Like, did somebody in the NFL office just like, somebody Google Lift Every Voice and Sing and pick the best version you can find?
No, they recorded that just for this.
Oh, this is the special edition.
This is a special
edition.
Yeah.
Roger Goodell actually came out of pocket for this one.
Because if you notice, they're at the shoot at the Coliseum and they're wearing masks, so this is something that was filmed.
Okay. Oh, see, I haven't seen the video. Because I'll be honest, Marcus, like, a lot of those games, I came in like mid first quarter. So I knew they did the anthem because I saw, you know, them talking about it during the game and then on SportsCenter, but I didn't actually see how they presented it. So they just basically just played the Alicia Keys video.
It was a music video, yeah, essentially.
Okay.
And they did it so far ahead of kickoff that the way it was presented early on was you'd play Lift Every Voice and then you'd play the national anthem back to back. Or that's how I interpreted it. But that wasn't the case. They did the anthem at the usual time and they did Lift Every Voice, you know, ahead of time. So you can take a guess as to why that might be, but
yes.
You know.
Yeah, now that, see, because I thought, yeah, like you said, Marcus, they were going to play him in succession, but now the Dolphins' decision makes a lot more sense, where they're like, we're not here for your publicity stunt. We're not here, you know, to be used as symbols, particularly when, you know, you're playing the Black National Anthem 20, 30 minutes ahead of time, and then we're going to do the real National Anthem when everybody's watching.
Yeah, so, I mean, there's that. I mean, again, we mentioned this when it happened. No one asked for this. We didn't ask for the Lift Every Voice. So why the NFL decided to do this?
Put this in the same category as removing Aunt Jemima and Uncle Ben. Like,
yeah.
We didn't ask for that, I guess. But we didn't. That's not what we're out here talking about. What we out here protesting for?
Yeah, but once we're done with tonight's games, we're probably done with the anthem until Super Bowl. So we don't have to worry about watching the anthem or hearing the anthem or, you know, none of that. So I thought the stuff in the end zone was pretty weak, like the end racism. And if you wanted to make a statement, instead of having Falcons or Chiefs have like end racism in the actual end zone, like the actual lettering, you know, that would be similar to what the NBA is doing with.
Or if you wanted to make a statement, you could have told them Chiefs fans to stop booing. When the players was out there being unified and standing in solidarity, you could have somebody get on the loudspeaker and say, hey, if y'all keep acting like this, y'all can go home.
Yeah, about that. So I'm not surprised, but I am surprised. I'm only surprised because you're paying money and you're probably paying a premium because it's, you know, only so many tickets
to see your team,
and by paying your money, you're supporting these Black athletes that you're then going about and booing.
Yeah.
It just doesn't make any sense.
like if you didn't want to see, you knew this was happening, right? Like, this wasn't a surprise. They didn't spring this.
They didn't
pick
a knee. They just linked together at the 50-yard line. It wasn't
You're booing solidarity. You're booing unity.
Yeah.
Oh, I out of all the celebrations, obviously, Marcus, I'm partial to the teams that we're wearing because that was the game I was focused on yesterday, or one of the games I was most focused on yesterday. But I thought the knee was an interesting little gimmick that the Seahawks and the Falcons did after kickoff.
I didn't see a lot of people talking about it after it happened.
And like, it made sense because obviously Atlanta, as we've talked about for years on this show, was a chocolate city, quote unquote, predominantly African American city. And then with the Seahawks, like, Seattle is super liberal anyway, but then you got a Black quarterback. in Russell Wilson, who was the face of that team. So I thought it was an appropriate, like, as far as empty symbolic gestures go, I thought it was a good one.
Yeah, I mean, it took both sides agreeing to this, and I forgot which player exactly decided the idea and broached the other side, but yeah, I thought it was, for what it was, it would kick off. They kicked off with a touchback, and then everyone on the field took a knee.
Yeah.
So, yeah, so I mean, it's very similar to what you see. If you've been watching, I know you haven't been watching, but if you watch the English Premier League, what they've been doing at each match.
I have not been watching the English Premier League.
I know. They take a knee to start each match.
Now. Okay.
So, and they've been doing that since they came back in July. And their season for this year just started this past weekend. And if they've kept that up, they're continuing to take the knee to start the match. So,
okay.
Listen, if Europe can do it, we can do it too.
Yeah, so that was kind of the big thing going into it. Like the Dolphins put out an interesting video, like we alluded to earlier, Marcus, saying why they weren't going to participate in the pregame stuff and they were going to stay in the locker room during the anthems. I thought that was interesting. You know, we saw some statements online from various players that I think were interesting. But what everybody was here for, Marcus, was the actual football, to see how this was going to work. You know, because we've seen college football in recent weeks with limited fans, but we didn't know how it was going to look with the big boys. And so Thursday night, we kicked the season off with the reigning, defending, undisputed NFL Universal Champions, the Kansas City Chiefs, taking on the Houston Texans. And then Sunday, yesterday, was the official first Sunday of football. And so, Marcus Vandenberg, what were the – because I got a couple games that I was the most interested in that we could talk about, but what were the games that caught your interest that you were going to make sure to either watch on TV or follow along, you know, on social media?
Yeah, so I don't have DirecTV. And I don't even have NFL Network because UVerse, I don't know why, but so I have no access to Red Zoom.
Does Byron Allen have like an NFL alternative network?
It's like, it would be the NFL.
Coming up next, more football. yeah, Byron Allen needs to call up Dwayne Johnson and they can break bread.
Partnership. Yeah.
Yes.
It'll just be called Football Channel.
Football Channel.
Yes.
Well, look, is it any stranger than having a professional team just called the Football Team?
Well, they're 1-0, so.
It was undefeated.
Yeah. So I had to watch Viking Packers for the morning game. And then I watched Saints Bucks.
Yeah, I think that was like pretty much everybody got that
marquee game. I saw a little bit of Chargers Bengals, including the end of that. And okay.
Tyrod Taylor with that first W of the season.
Yeah, and I watched most of Cowboys Rams before falling asleep on the couch. So
you missed Jalen Ramsey auditioning for the nighttime primetime Emmy.
Yeah, I missed the pass interference stuff.
For that acting job.
Yeah. But of those games, I was most interested in Bucs and Saints.
Okay. So, yeah, let's talk about that, because the games that were available in Virginia, the early games were the Football Team versus the Eagles. And on the other channel, on CBS, it was the new and improved New England Patriots, Marcus Vandenberg, with Cam Newton versus the Browns. And then the late game, like most of the country, was Bucks
Dolphins,
versus
the Browns was
the Dolphins. Yeah. 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 Browns and Ravens. Yeah. They kept switching back and forth between Browns, Ravens, and Dolphins, Pats. And then the evening game, the afternoon game, I guess late afternoon, was Bucks Saints, like most of the country. So yeah, let's talk about the Pats first, Marcus. Then we can get to the other side of the off season drama that everybody was talking about. So we saw Cam Newton in his first game ever not playing for the Carolina Panthers in the NFL. Cam gonna be Cam Marcus, so he showed up to the building as only Cam Newton can. Like Bill Belichick can't put a blanket, can't put a damper on all that style. So Cam Newton, your man Cameron Newton, Marcus Vandenberg, showed up looking like a cross between Easter Sunday and a knockoff version of the Riddler. Showed up to the stadium like he was the puzzler. Like, I got a puzzle for you to solve, Batman. Showed up in this canary mustard yellow suit from the Steve Harvey collection with the little black pimp hat. Showed up and then had a pedestrian passing day. But the bigger news was the running, where Cam scored 2 touchdowns, ran for 75 yards, and the Patriots got the W over the Dolphins. So, I don't know if you caught any of the highlights, but what do you make of this first game for this new-look New England Patriots?
I saw the highlights, and I saw a lot of the Cam Newton stands sort of sticking their chest out, like, see, I told you Cam wasn't washed, so listen. I'm not saying he had a bad game, but like it was one game and it was the Dolphins. So
yeah.
I still don't know if I buy into this Patriots team as a whole, but I think for Cam's situation, like he's much better off in New England than Carolina. He's got at least some running backs that he can hand off to. I'm not really sold on the receivers yet for New England. Edelman is still there. Nikhil Harry is still kind of
the post game interview with Julian Edelman was so awkward, Marcus. Because I forget the woman that was the sideline reporter for CBS, but she was talking to Julian after the game, and she's like, "So Julian, you know, new quarterback back there. How do you think the offense worked?" We're just happy we got the win. I can't tell you how the offense looked or what we would call it. You got to ask Coach Belichick or Coach McDaniel. That's above my pay grade. I'm just happy to be here. Cam was, I want to say, like 11 for 15 for like 155 yards, something in that neighborhood. So this offense, you know what it reminded me of, Marcus? It reminded me of when Harbaugh first integrated, and integrated is a funny word, but first brought Lamar Jackson into the Ravens as a starter. And they kind of reconfigured the offense where, yes, we're going to pass when we need to, but this is going to be a run-based offense. We're going to have Lamar. We're going to use Mark Ingram. We're going to use all the runners we can throw at you, and then we'll pass when we need to. That's kind of what it felt like, at least for week one for the Patriots.
Cam was 15-18 for 155, no touchdowns. Cam also ran the ball 15 times, as you mentioned, which – that is not something you want to do. Considering his recent injury history, you do not want him taking 15 unprotected shots of him just running the ball. Like, goal line is fine, but designated run plays for Cam at age 30, probably not going to be.
But I think if you're going to use it,
smart.
The early weeks are the time to use it, because it doesn't look like – because even like in that first game with the Texans and the Chiefs, like David Johnson, like I don't know what David Johnson is, Marcus, like he may or may not be washed, but he was making some pretty positive, picking up some pretty positive yardage early on. So I think like if you're going to run Cam more than you need to, better to do it in the first 3 or 4 weeks than at the end of the season when these defenses have had some time.
Yeah, I mean, overall, they ran the ball 42 times, which that is.
And they've got, they've got the running backs to do it. Like I don't think they have any great running backs, but they've got a lot of running backs, you know. So if anybody's going to be able to throw 3 or 4 different running backs plus Cam at you, it's the Patriots.
Yeah, I mean, Michelle, Burkhead, James White, and then Damien Harris will be back after, I think, week 4. So we'll have another running back to play with, so. I think they'll, they're going to be, I think, a run first offense now, which is, you know, the last 20 years, it really hasn't been the case in New England. I mean,
yeah,
they're famous for just sort of picking up running backs like Corey Dillon back in the day of just, as Bomani calls it, the open box special. I mean, that was that was the, you know, the norm for New England winning running backs. And so curious to see how they do. But the Dolphins, while they looked a little better last year, Ryan Fitzpatrick is not going to be the answer.
So how long do you think before we see a two out there?
Let's see. Who did they put in that suite? I don't think they want to rush Tua either. I think that's the problem. You don't want to set him up for...
They're not going anywhere this season. Nobody expects them to. There's not... You know, it'd be one thing if this was a team that was a playoff contender, but they're not. So I would take as much time as they need to bring in Tua and just, you know, eat these losses.
They play Buffalo next week at home. And then at Jacksonville on a Thursday night. So that's a short turnaround. And then home versus Seattle. So, wow, their schedule's tough. And then they go at San Francisco, at Denver, both LA teams at home. So I think by the time they get to the Seattle game, especially because they'll have, I think, 10 days off in between the Thursday night and the Sunday night. So week four, I think we'll see Tua. Assuming that
you're trying to throw two out there against the Seahawks?
I mean, the Seahawks defense isn't what it used to be. I mean, look, you let Matt Ryan throw for almost 500 yards.
Matt Ryan is a legendary figure in the NFL, Marcus Vandenberg.
Legendary regular season figure. Yeah, he's the Milwaukee Bucks of quarterbacks. He's just regular season.
Yeah, we got that smoke for Giannis coming up a little bit later. But yeah, I think, you know, last thing on the Pats before we flip the coin, Marcus, I feel like this is going to be a work in progress, because I don't think what we saw in week one is going to be what this team is in week 16, if we get to week 16. I think that they're going to, because Cam is still, you know, he came into camp late. He was signed late. They didn't have a proper preseason because of the Rona. I feel like Cam and Belichick and McDaniel are going to find a way to open things up gradually. You know, maybe they cut the season in the quarters. So the first four games, we're kind of getting Cam into the flow. The next four games, we open things up a little bit more the next four after that. And then by the time we get to the end of the season, they're doing, you know, things that look more like the Patriots than this past Sunday did. But I feel like the defense is still decent enough. Like, it's not what it was last year because they missed some key people. But I feel like the Patriots, particularly in that division, which, I mean, I guess Josh Allen is on the come up. I don't know what's going on with your boy Sam Darnold. We just talked about the Dolphins. Like, to me, the Patriots still, at worst, are a 9-win team with Cam. So I could see them making the playoffs.
Yeah, their schedule is pretty tough. I mean, they got Seattle next week on the road, which, granted, no fans in Seattle, but Seattle looked pretty good yesterday against the Falcons. And then they're home for the Raiders, and then at Kansas City, which...
Yeah, that'll be...
And, man, we're getting Cam versus Mahomes, huh? October 4th.
We're getting Cam versus Russ and Cam versus Mahomes in the first 4 weeks.
Yeah. And then later on in the season, they play at the Chargers. And then 4 days later, they play at the Rams, which is, you know, same stadium. And then at the Dolphins, which, you know, I guess if we're talking about the AFC East, I'm not sure who that – I guess the Buffalo would be the team that would threaten the Patriots, right? And Buffalo –
On paper, the Bills have the best shot of dethroning the Patriots, but I still think they're about a year away from taking over that top spot.
I'm all in on Jaheim Allen and the Buffalo Bills. He's not pretty to watch, but
I was going to say we haven't seen a white quarterback that plays stereotypically black as more or how would you say it, Marcus? Like the stereotype is the word I was looking for. Like what people used to say black quarterbacks played like. We haven't seen a white quarterback in that mold since Tim Tebow. And maybe before that, like who would be the white black quarterback before Tebow? The guy that is barely like is a mediocre passer but relies on his athleticism.
Flutie.
Ooh. Flutie could throw. Flutie was just short. Flutie. Doug had an arm on him.
That's how many yards Flutie ran for. I feel like Flutie was a runner.
Yeah, Flutie had some wheels, but Flutie could actually pass, though. He just couldn't. He couldn't see over that line.
Flutie. Oh, man, these percentages. Flutie wasn't completing passes like that. Yeah. Well, he had 1 year. 1999, at age 37, Doug Flutie rushed for 476 yards.
Okay, Flutie. Was your man Ryan Leaf, was he a scrambler?
No, he was not.
Only scrambled when the cops were around.
I wasn't going to make any jokes, but.
Hey, he's better now. That's what matters.
He got caught up recently, right? I thought he got arrested or something.
Oh, he did? Damn.
Yeah.
Yeah, he's had a rough go with things.
Yeah. There haven't been many. Well, what? I mean, well, now Steve Young could absolutely throw the.
Yeah, Steve.
I mean, there've been
Steve
mobile white quarterbacks, but
yeah, I'm talking about like the Tim Tebow mold of the like I can run and that's about I might can throw a little bit, but I'm gonna run. I guess what I'm asking, Marcus, what white NFL quarterback could you have seen playing in the MEAC or the SWAC?
They would call him Milk. That'd be his nickname.
Yes.
I thought maybe Jade Locker, but he wasn't just very. He was wasn't good. Period. So, I mean, really, it would have been Manziel or someone like that.
Who oh, been, that's the one. That's it. Yeah, Johnny Manziel. Yeah, Johnny Manziel. So that was the Patriots game. Now let's flip the coin, Marcus, because we had the battle of the future Hall of Famers as Fox was trying to promote it between Drew Brees and them Saints versus Tom Brady and the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, Marcus. What did you make of this showdown on week one?
This is the game that I miss the fans the most, just knowing that the Superdome and what that environment would have been like.
They would have been on Brady.
Yeah.
They would have been on Brady like seasoning on Zataran's rice.
I thought the game overall was a bit of a disappointment. Yeah. Both
a lot of these games were, like, if we're being real with it, Marcus, a lot of these games, like, and it's, I guess, you know, to be fair,
natural.
There was no preseason. There was barely, you know, a training camp because of what's going on in the real world. So you get what you get.
Yeah. I mean, I think you're just trying to get through about injuries at this point.
Mm-hmm.
But we did have some injuries yesterday. We'll talk about that in a second. Yeah, I thought both guys looked like 40-year-old plus quarterbacks, especially Brady.
Oh, Brady, look, I shouldn't have had so much enjoyment looking at Brady out there struggling, Marcus. He was struggling. Because, I think what brought me the most joy, Marcus, was the fact that Tom was out here. You know, Tom Brady is Tom Brady. We're not going to say that the man isn't great, one of the greatest football players of all time, one of the greatest quarterbacks of all time. But when Tom Brady threw that pick six, and then when Tom Brady threw another interception, and when Tom Brady starts arguing with, you know, yelling at his teammates like he usually did when he was back in New England, I was like, I don't know how long that's going to last, Marcus, because it's one thing when you're yelling at your teammates and your teammates are, shall we say, high motor guys, scrappy guys, mm-hmm. You know, first in the gym, last to leave guys. But
he found one on his team yesterday. We'll talk about that in a second.
Yeah. But when you are yelling at these, as Dusty Rhodes would say, these get down Boogie Fever boys, that ain't going to last for too long, Tom Brady. I don't care how many Super Bowl rings you got.
Yeah, I mean, listen, this is a team. Well, granted, he was banged up all week leading up to the game. Yeah. But when you have Mike Evans on this team, he needs to catch the ball more than one time for 2 yards. Like that.
Yep.
That's not going to tell it. I mean, the fact that Scotty Miller had more targets than Mike Evans or even Gronk is, you know, concerning, I guess.
Yo, Gronk, you know, you talked about like Cam, people saying Cam might be washed or whatever. Like Gronk doesn't look, I mean, he's still physically, like he's in better shape than the two of us combined. Mm-hmm. But in terms of being in football shape, I don't know if Gronk has it anymore, Marcus. Not to be the weapon that he was in New England.
Well, I mean, the good thing is they have two other tight ends that
OJ Howard
and Cameron Brate.
Yep.
If you're smart about using Gronk at the goal line or inside the red zone, I think he's still, because of the size, can still be an asset. But, you know, between the 20s, I'm not sure Gronk is going to get you much in terms of, you know, having him on the field.
He's not going to stretch the field for you anymore.
No.
Mm. But yeah, it just, like, I mean, Drew Brees wasn't great, but compared to Tom Brady, like, I was just like, because we've seen, Marcus, the last few seasons that Tom Brady has looked older, but he's still been able to overcome that to a certain extent. But it just looked like he wasn't on the same page. And granted, this only week one. Like, I don't want to make this a Tom Brady is washed segment. But I feel like
people have done that in the past, and you know,
I ain't trying to be out there like Dan Levitard or Max Kellerman, and put my name on that list. But I feel like, you know, because people before the season were saying, "Oh man, look at all these weapons Brady's got for the first time in his career since he had Randy Moss. He's got all these weapons. They're a Super Bowl contender. They're going to blow through the division." It's like, I don't know. Like, I think they'll make the playoffs, but I feel like everybody that was saying stuff like that, Marcus, were, one, discounting the fact that this Tom Brady ain't the same Tom Brady from 10, 15 years ago, and two, say what you will about, you know, the Falcons and the Panthers or whatever, but every team in the NFC South got quarterbacks, right? Whether you're talking about Matt Ryan, Teddy Bridgewater, Drew Brees, like, you're not playing whoever the hell the Bills have run out for the last 10 years or whoever the hell the Dolphins or the Jets have thrown out there for the last decade. You're playing legitimate quarterbacks. And so each week in your division, it's not going to be a cakewalk. So I feel like 10-6 is where I'm going to put the Bucks, but I don't see them like just running through the NFC, particularly not the NFC South, and being this juggernaut that some people were saying.
I mean, even though they lost, I thought the defense looked pretty good.
The defense was
the
solid.
The defense last year was number one against the rush, and Alvin Kamara had, I think, 17 rushing yards yesterday.
Yeah.
16 rushing yards. So, you know, defense looks solid. Leonard Fournette was a late sign, and he only had 5 carries for 5 yards yesterday. That'll change in the future, I'm guessing. So I think, you know, there's definitely talent there. And,
yeah,
you know, as you mentioned, we've seen Brady have slow starts in the Patriots, and the Patriots have slow starts, and then all of a sudden, you know, then the Super Bowl. But I think a lot of that's on Belichick for coaching them. No offense to Bruce Arians, Mr. Kangol, but you know,
we love Bruce, but he ain't no Belichick.
No, it's just one. So I think they'll be fine. I think they'll figure it out, but it's not going to be a cakewalk for them to win the division.
No, and like the big point that you brought up, Mark, is when you've got these weapons, these are guys that want to go, right? These guys that want to fly. And when you look at the success Brady's had in recent history, even winning the Super Bowl within the last 5 years, it's been more intermediate routes, right? He's not airing it out like he used to be able to. So it's like, I feel like in much the same way as Bill Belichick had to fit things to what Cam Newton can do right now. Like, you got to look at Tom Brady realistically, right? You might have to have a hard conversation with this dude. Be like, hey, we need to change some things to put you in the best position to succeed. And maybe, Marcus, maybe that means not putting everything on Tom Brady. Maybe that means, you know, getting the running game more involved. And like you said, the defense is solid. So maybe putting it in a situation where Brady doesn't have to lead you to a Super Bowl, but he can be an important piece of a team that could perhaps have a playoff run.
Well, they got Scotty Miller. They're good. I mean, I love that. The announcers brought up comparing all these white slot receivers that Brady stayed with. And, you know, he fits that mold.
Yes, there's a very specific mold for the Scotty Millers of the world, Marcus Vandenberg.
Wes Walker, Julian Edelman.
Like
Chris Hogan.
There we go. I had to bring up the picture. I had to bring up the picture for everybody. And this only works if you're watching on the video version on the Patreon. But yeah, that's your man Scotty Miller, folks. That's the weapon right there for Tom Brady on these streets.
It's like a gritty, heady gym rat.
Yeah, so
knows the playbook.
Yeah, knows the playbook. let's see. So
110%. Yeah, all of that.
Definitely. He's definitely a high motor guy. Probably the highest motor on the team.
Yeah, I know.
You know, those other guys can learn a thing or two from Scotty Miller. the last big game of the night, Marcus, that you watched part of before you fell asleep, how you falling asleep on the West Coast, brother? You're like, you.
Man, I was up at.
It's like 6, 7 at night when you was up at 4 with young Simba.
Yeah.
He was like, I don't want my daddy watching this trash. but yeah, your LA Rams, Marcus, unless you're adopting the Chargers this year.
No.
I mean, they got Tyrod. They got Austin Eckler.
I don't hate the Chargers. I mean, I love Anthony Lynn.
I like Anthony Lynn.
Seems great. But, you know, the Chargers are – they could use a superstar. Like, they could use that, you know, can't-miss player. And the closest they had to that was Phillip Rivers, I guess, and now he's gone. So –
Speaking of Father Time, Phillip Rivers doing Phillip Rivers things in Indianapolis now. The main event game on Sunday night was Marcus's LA Rams taking on America's team, the Dallas Cowboys. Your guys got the win, Marcus, but what did you make of them? Because I think the defense is solid, and we knew the defense was going to be solid, even better than that. I don't know if I'm sold on your man Jared Goff though, because fool me once, shame on you. Fool me twice, as George Bush say, you're not going to fool me again.
Goff is, I think he is what he is at this point. I don't see him taking some next step to improve his game.
So he's not as bad as year one, but he's not as good as year two. He's somewhere in the middle.
He's somewhere in the middle. Yeah, year one was, you know,
Jeff Fisher's fault. Feeds.
Yeah, you know, the Rams lost Brandon Cooks, so they're down sort of a weapon at receiver. But this might be good for Robert Woods to sort of have him elevate his game and step up and be, you know, the 1B, the Cooper Cups, 1A.
You talk about a player with a high motor, that Cooper Cup, Marcus.
I love Cooper Cup, man.
I'm surprised you didn't name Simba Cooper. Cooper Vandenberg, that's a fancy name.
Ooh, I like that.
He can get into any school in the county.
Call him Coop for short. Hey, Coop. Yeah. I thought the running game was the best it's looked since healthy Todd Gurley.
Yeah.
So it's been at least 20, what, 18?
Yeah.
And they, you know, they drafted Cam Akers from Florida State.
Yeah, they got Akers and Henderson and Brown.
Yeah, Brown from Texas had a – he never really had a chance to really show what he can do since he got drafted, and he looked good last night. And then Henderson was hurt most of the week, and he only had a couple of carries. So I think the run game has improved. I mean, it's going to come down to Jared Goff, and if he can not make mistakes and hurt this team, if he can just – not make mistakes, I think they'll be fine. If he starts doing too much and forcing throws and just what we saw last year of him, then I think they're in trouble. But, you know, listen, the Cowboys are still the Cowboys, and it's still a good win for them to, you know, to beat them at home. So despite whatever late game dramatics or bad calls we might have missed.
Yeah, but I think, like, yeah, that the acting by your man's Jalen Ramsey aside, like, I think people forget, and I don't know how people forget, Marcus, like, how good Aaron Donald is.
Oh,
and,
yeah.
And, like, because there was a play where he just blew up the Cowboys. Like, Ezekiel Elliott is not a small dude, Marcus Vandenberg, and he, like, shoved Ezekiel Elliott like he was a little kid. And it's like, yeah, like, if the offense can just, like you said, Marcus, if they can put up, you know, 20 points a game, 21 points a game, and not mess up, like, this could be a good team. This could be a team that could challenge the Seahawks in that division. Like, I think that division overall is going to be pretty solid this year.
Yeah, Arizona is still.
That boy, Kyler Murray, Marcus. Kyler Murray.
Yeah.
See what happens? They the gate. Look, you talk about Tom Brady having weapons. They done went out and got this man the ultimate weapon, and got him for a handful of magic beans and a Subway card. So yeah, like, I think Kyler Murray and Arizona, and then you talk about Russell Wilson and the Seahawks, as well as, you know, the NFC champions, the reigning NFC champions, the 49ers. Like, it's going to be interesting in that NFC West.
Yeah. I think, I mean, that's one of those divisions where it might come down to having three teams that are 9-7. And, you know, the team's winning based on a tiebreaker or something like that. But
yeah.
The one thing about the Rams, four of the next five games are on the road. And I think that will really dictate how this season goes.
And then the road schedule is different this year. Yeah, because we can maybe talk about injuries as well in this particular part, Marcus, because of the changes with Corona. Like, used to be, you know, if you had that West Coast spin, you know, you could just kind of stay out there for the week.
Yeah.
Now you gotta go back. You can't go, you know, you ain't gotta go home, but you gotta get the hell out of here. Now you gotta go back and then make that trip again all the way back across the country. So these West Coast teams might be affected by this maybe more so than people think.
Yeah, the Rams play the Eagles next Sunday. And then they play at Buffalo.
So they could go to Philly, then they gotta go back to LA, then they gotta go out to Buffalo, and then they gotta go back to LA.
And if that's the case in December, the Patriots, as you mentioned, they have a – and maybe they'll find a way around this by December, but they play
– Oh, you didn't hear, Marcus? We're getting the vaccine by November. That's what I heard.
That's right. November 3rd, yeah.
A credible source told me.
Yeah. The Patriots play both the Rams and Chargers within 4 days of each other. So,
wow.
You know, I don't see them going back to New England and coming back, but who knows, by December.
I can see Belichick doing something shady. Like they get on the airplane, but then the airplane just, like, literally goes from LA to, like, Northern California and just stops. Like, they're hiding out in Sacramento for the week. Did I see Cam Newton in Sacramento? No, it wasn't me. It wasn't me. But they had that same mustard yellow suit. There was some other dude with a mustard yellow suit.
Boogie Cousins.
It was Boogie Cousins. But, you know, speaking of kind of the changes that the league has had to make because of Corona, Marcus, what do you make of, you know, some of the injuries that you were talking about earlier? Is that something we're going to see throughout the season just because guys didn't have the proper time to prepare? And then B, do you feel like, and I, you know, we talked about this during baseball, when baseball came back, as fun as this past weekend was, do you feel like the NFL, like how much faith do you have that the NFL can get to the finish line without interruption?
The first part, yeah, I think we'll see more guys getting hurt. Marlon Mack is out for the year. He tore his Achilles.
Yep. And was it Von Miller was lost in the last practice before the season? Which is, like that's terrible. Because that would, like, Denver's defense was something I was looking forward to this season. See if they were going to be able to bolster that offense. But the injuries, I feel like, Marcus, we talked about it with baseball. Like, you're going to see a lot of dudes. Like, fantasy going to be crazy this year because it's going to be a lot of dudes that you have never heard of that are going to be picked up on this waiver wire this year. Like, it's going to be dudes on Yahoo Fantasy Sports that ain't even got no picture starting for people's lineups.
Especially at running back, yeah. That's the one I worry about. And then – the second part of your question, I think they'll finish. I think the fact that they have made it, I think the hardest part of the season would be training camp, just from the sense of a sort of the boredom that comes with training camp and all the free time you have outside of practice. Like, if they were not, I guess, getting into trouble when they actually had the time to get in trouble, then right. I think with the season starting and everything being so regimented and scheduled out, that unless you're having teams just really saying fuck it on the road and just, you know, going out, I think they'll be okay. I think you'll see, you know, a case here, a case there. But it seems like the big thing for me is, like, if the number of tests, the number of tests we're doing on these guys, if you're able to test almost essentially daily and you're able to catch the issue when it happens, then you can pull that player from the room and treat them. I think with baseball, at least early on, they weren't doing testing every day. So, you know, you had a guy come in sick. He was interacting with players, those players who did sick. And then it would just sort of, you know, go on from there. As you saw with the Giants and the Padres of the weekend, which it sounds like there might have been a false positive, but one person tested positive, they stopped playing, they retested that person multiple times, came back negative, and then they were able to play on Sunday. So I think the testing will be the biggest reason why they're able to finish the season, not so much of the coronavirus getting better.
Yeah, and they've had, you know, like you're saying, they've had the example of Major League Baseball to look at. And so, yeah, granted, football is a different sport. As late, great Kobe Bryant would say, it's a different animal and the same beast than baseball. But I feel like they've had the opportunity to learn. And then, like you mentioned as well, football is very regimented. So even more so this year. So I'm hopeful that they'll be able to finish the season with no major interruptions. Before we leave the gridiron, Marcus, though, we do need to speak on something that our brothers and sisters over the Undefeated tweeted out yesterday. A monumental occasion, which may affect a segment that we've done on this show during the football season over the years, and we will definitely have to bring back this season. But the number of black quarterbacks, Marcus, it's exploding. It's out of control.
We are up to 10 starting quarterbacks.
Wow. we can finally do a top 10.
Yeah, we're up to, what, 33%.
Yeah, I don't have to bring in E.J. Manuel and Marcus Mariota to try to fill it out.
Yeah. Actually, no, not even 33%. It's 32 teams. So we're not even at 30% probably.
Yeah, this is – And I think the fact, Marcus, that made me smile when I look at the list is like how well so many, if not most of these players are doing. When you talk about, obviously, you know, somebody like a Lamar Jackson, the reigning league MVP, or, you know, Kyler Murray. Like, Kyler Murray was somebody that I thought was going to be good, Marcus, but I thought the Kyler Murray, and again, having a weapon like Hopkins helps a lot, but I thought the Kyler Murray that we saw yesterday was going to probably take another year, maybe another 2 years to get to that point. So, yeah, like Russell Wilson, obviously, one of the great black quarterbacks in the NFL. So I feel like whatever remnant of that myth that, you know, you can't win with a black quarterback, like it's not completely gone because Bill Polian famously 2 years ago said Lamar Jackson should be a wide receiver. So like that mindset is not completely gone, but I think it's slowly but surely being dispelled.
I mean, the top two quarterbacks in the league are both black. I mean, Mahomes and Lamar Jackson. I think those are that's one too in terms of quarterbacks at the moment. And then
argument to be made. Like, granted, it's only been 3 years, Marcus, but there's an argument to be made that with Pat Mahomes, we might be watching one of the five best quarterbacks in the history of the NFL right now.
Yeah.
So. That Chiefs team, man. Like I didn't know your man Clyde Edwards-Helaire was that nasty with it. Like, you telling me they gonna have a dedicated not no disrespect to Shady McCoy and the other cats they had running last year, but you telling me they got a dependable three down back with those weapons on the outside with Travis Kelce?
Yeah,
that's gonna be a problem.
I mean, the goal line. Maybe he's not the man for the goal line because. There are several situations in Thursday night's game where
so he got to put some weights in his pockets.
Yeah, he was not getting past that defense, but yeah, he's very explosive.
Yeah, so I think maybe more so than ever. Like, I'm glad this is the year, Marcus, for the black quarterback, given the backdrop of what's going on in the real world. Because you know, we know quarterback is one of the most important, if not the most important positions on the field. It's certainly the most scrutinized. It's certainly the position that if you're good at it and your team wins, you have a platform. So the fact that Mahomes has a platform and Dak has a platform, which we'll talk about here in a second, Marcus, the fact that, you know, Cam has a platform to speak. I'm glad to see, you know, Deshaun, you know, these young black men being put in these positions of leadership. So you ready to talk about that man Skip Bayless for a second?
Let's go for it.
Skip. So Dak Prescott, when was it? Thursday or Friday last week, Marcus?
It was, I think, Wednesday.
Wednesday, okay.
Sometime last week, yeah.
Yeah, last week, Dak Prescott talked, and I don't know the outlet who he was speaking to, but he was talking about the depression that he was dealing with after his brother, correct, committed suicide?
Correct.
And just kind of talking about how he got through that and how he was able to cope with that. And, you know, a lot of people positively reacted to that, as they should have, because, you know, we've talked about it on the show, Marcus, how men, and in particular black men, don't often talk about their feelings and talk about mental health. And for Dak to be, you know, the face of America's team, to come out here and say, you know, put that on the record, I thought that was pretty brave of him. But not everybody felt that way, Marcus Vandenberg.
Your boy. Your boy Skip Bayless was like,
I don't even understand. Yeah, I watched the clip because I don't even understand the point he was trying to make, Marcus, because basically Skip was like, he shouldn't have said that because now he's diminished as a leader. He can't lead the Cowboys on the field because they won't respect him. It's like, I don't understand where, like, granted, like, that might be the mindset of some old school, quote unquote, football guys. But I think in 2020, Dak's teammates in particular wouldn't be looking at him like he's weird or he can't lead them because he was talking about how he felt after his brother committed suicide. Like, Skip was, I don't even know where Skip, because we know Skip sometimes, oftentimes, all the time, Marcus, likes to say stuff just to start the argument, right?
Mm-hmm.
To get the headline. But it felt like if that's what he was trying to do with this, then he severely miscalculated the reaction.
This is a, you know, a very old point of view, I think, to have on mental health. And this is where I remind you that Skip Bayless is 68 and sounded very much like a 68-year-old might sound when it came, when it comes to mental health and just how to respond to people being vulnerable in that sense.
Yes. This is the part where if this were in print, maybe editor Marcus would have the, like, the parenthetical. This is the same Skip Bayless who tried to dog Troy Aikman, you know, with rumors that Troy Aikman was gay.
Yeah.
To frame Skip Bayless's mindset being this 68-year-old man. But yeah, like, I feel like, Marcus, like, even, you know, people maybe in that age range, maybe in that generation, like our parents or even our grandparents, if they're still around for the audience out there, like, I feel like that's an idea that even amongst older people is kind of falling to the wayside in terms of looking at people when it comes to mental health. And so for Skip to be on national TV, and God bless Shannon Sharp, Marcus, because I don't know, like, Shannon was trying to give Skip an out, right? Shannon was like, You know, I understand, Skip, that you might not have done it that way, but you can certainly understand feeling like he had to say this, and you can respect that, right? No, I cannot, Shannon. It's like, what? Come on, man.
Yeah. And his, not even apology, but what he said the next day was he tried to just clarify what he was trying to say, because he was told that people misunderstood the point he was trying to make. During all this, it came out that Skip's contract is up with Fox, I believe, the end of this month. And there's been no announcement if he's re-signed or not, but considering how Jason Whitlock just disappeared from Fox on a Friday and said, you know, this is my last show. And then the news came out that he was gone.
And the heavens rejoiced.
Yeah. It would not surprise me if we hit the end of the month and Skip Bayless is signing off and that's that. So,
and here's the thing, Marcus, I'm glad that you brought up Whitlock because it got me to thinking about, because now Whitlock is with Clay Travis and his, I was trying to find a nice word, but yeah, his group of thugs. this is Fox Sports, which is part of the, you know, Fox Corporation.
Yep.
It wouldn't surprise me if, because people love Shannon Sharp.
Yep.
It wouldn't surprise me if they kept the show and maybe reconfigured it and brought in Skip Bayless, millennial Skip Bayless, and that's Will Kane, who just signed with Fox. Shannon Sharp and Kane, undisputed.
Yeah, I mean, I don't even
Will.
I don't even know if Skip is conservative like that. He's not Will Kane level, if he is.
No. But. And, like, it's crazy because I think from everybody, like, I've never met Skip Bayless, Marcus. I don't know if you have.
Yeah.
But, yeah, everybody that I've talked to that is, or that I've heard on the radio, or that I know, like you, like, that has interacted with Skip Bayless says he's a nice guy. And, like, a lot of what Skip does is, like, pro wrestling. Like, he's these are the things that he thinks, but he's also amplifying it.
Cowherd's the same way. Nice guy.
Yeah.
But he turns it on for the audience, which, you know, more power to you.
Yeah, and I feel like Skip got caught up trying to play the character of Skip Bayless and might have got the man Skip Bayless out of work. Because, yeah, like, if Fox decides not to re-sign him, then, like, ESPN ain't taking this man back. Mm-hmm. So it's like, NBC's not touching you, Skip. Like, I mean, I guess he could start his own platform and he'd certainly have at least some measure of an audience that would follow him. But you're not going to be as big as you were on Fox, and certainly not as big as you were when you were on ESPN with Stephen A.
This is the thing I don't understand. Like, if I were 68 and had worked, you know, 45 years of my life, I've had enough money in the bank, why am I still working? Like, why do I still want to work? Like, I didn't have time working at 68 and 8. Like,
why would I work in, like, the Skip Bayless vein where I have to play this character?
Yeah.
As opposed to, like Uncle Tony and Michael Wilbon, right? Like, you can tell, like, they don't have to work, but you can tell they enjoy talking with each other. Mm-hmm. They enjoy doing the show that they do. So, like, I can see that. But Skip, like, I don't know if Skip and Shannon are, like, tight like that off of the set. Like, so why would you want to stay on this argument show if not for your ego? Because let's be real, Mark. It's like a lot of
that's what it comes down to. Yeah, it's all,
a lot of this is ego with Skip, mm-hmm. including his apology. Because I feel like if Skip is this nice person that people say that he is, he would have been like, oh, okay, I understand. Like, I messed up. And I didn't want to be insensitive to Dak or to people out there that's going through mental health stuff. So I apologize. And it wasn't just like people, Marcus. It wasn't just folks on Twitter that were coming back at Skip. It was colleagues. It was NFL players. It was like nobody was riding with Skip Bayless except for the people that you would expect to ride with Skip Bayless with the American flags and their Twitter handles.
I mean, you can fake the apology, quote unquote. You can be as fake as you want to be with an apology.
Yes,
and that's where I don't get the people who
I've apologized so many times in my life, Marcus, where I didn't mean it, but it was the right thing to do.
Yes, and people believed you, right?
Yeah,
like you can issue an apology and then still, you know, get people to actually buy in. But
yeah,
you know, when you come in not even giving a damn about the apology, then that just tells you this is who he is. This is what he thinks. So
yeah, so this was not a good look for Skip. But again, to the I guess the silver lining, Marcus, is because Skip went out here and said something stupid, it shone a light on mental health, and like you had a lot of people come out and share their stories, and you know, Stephen A. Smith even, you know, went on First Take and talked about what he went through after his mother passed away. And so I feel like maybe that's the good out of all of this, is that men are seeing other men be real and be vulnerable and talk about mental health, which is a good thing.
Yeah, Stephen A. talked about that. I think there was GQ interview, Vanity Fair. He did a long sit down interview, print interview after his mom died. And that topic came up. And that was the first time that I, you know, obviously knew his mom had died and sort of what that had been like for him personally, trying to overcome his mother's death. But if you can find that interview, it's a pretty good read of trying to figure out who Stephen A. is as a man. But
that's the difference. I mean, granted, Stephen A. is younger than Skip, so, you know, maybe that does play into it. But Stephen A. is somebody who is very much a wrestling character. But even Stephen A. knows when to take the mask off and get real with the audience.
Yeah, I mean, they're both caricatures at time on TV of who they really are in real life. And Stephen A. is not as loud in person, but I mean, he's still Stephen A. Smith, so.
Yeah, so shout out to Stephen A., shout out to Dak Prescott. Skip Bayless, good luck with this contract. Marcus, are you ready to watch Will Cain on Undisputed, Marcus?
I don't watch Undisputed to begin with, so it doesn't matter.
I've only watched it in clip form. The only Fox Sports show that I watch, and it's a lot better now that a certain somebody is gone, is Speak for Yourself. Because I do like Marcellus and your man Acho.
Okay.
Yeah, Emmanuel Acho's on there now, replacing Jason Whitlock, which is an amazing upgrade. Granted, anybody would have been an upgrade, but Acho is like, I like Acho. I don't always agree with Acho, but I like the way he presents his arguments.
Yeah, I don't watch any of the talking head shows at all. I mean,
yeah, Fox might have the most unlikable lineup, Marcus. Like when Colin Cowherd is maybe my third favorite person on the Fox Sports TV lineup, and I don't even like Colin Cowherd. Like that's they've got a lot of unlikable people. Like Shannon Sharp is cool, Marcellus and Acho are cool. Cowherd's like the Mendoza line. Everybody else on the network is below that line.
That's fair.
But let's talk about somebody who might not be below the Mendoza line, Marcus, but he is certainly outside of the NBA bubble. And that's your two-time MVP, allegedly.
Oh.
Giannis Antetokounmpo.
I mean, he hasn't won yet. He should win.
Can they take it back?
They're not taking it back.
The MVP only given out to people inside the bubble. So sorry. what do you make, Marcus, of the Milwaukee Bucks going down in flames to the Miami Heat and having to leave the bubble?
The Bucks, you know, great regular season team.
Yes.
So great to the point where Giannis only averaged 30 minutes a game during the regular season. And a lot of that was because by the time the fourth quarter rolled around, you didn't need Giannis out there for 12 minutes. You could rest him.
And this is the second year in a row, right, where they've had the best record in the East?
Because
I know they were up there last year as well.
Yes,
first and second.
Or was it the Raptors last year in the East? I can't remember. But yeah, it was two seasons of them sort of being powerhouses in the regular season. And playoffs rolled around, especially the series in Miami, where, you know, there are some questionable coaching decisions when it came to minutes.
Not Coach Booty Man.
To how long Coach Bud, Stephen Jai is out in the court, or not keeping out in the court. Giannis ended up going the entire season without playing more than 40 minutes in a game. The last time he played 40-plus minutes was Game 6 against the Raptors last year, which, you know, the Bucks lost. But so, you know, I thought that if this guy is your MVP, right, he should be on the court 40-plus minutes, especially if you're struggling with Miami. And at some point you need to tell – and I'm sure Giannis would like to play 40-plus minutes tonight, but – it's not his call, but not having him on the floor ended up being, you know, sort of the demise of this team because they just didn't have the weapons before Giannis's injury to really keep up with Miami. Yeah. And you know,
even before the injury, though, like it's not like this was a fluke by the Heat, because even before the injury, they would give Milwaukee that work.
Yeah, I mean, and this is no disrespect to what the Heat have done. But the Bucks should have won the series just based on Giannis alone. You know, Giannis gets hurt, comes back. Actually, he didn't miss any time during that first injury, and then he gets hurt the second time, and that knocks him out the series. And, you know, the Bucks win a game and eventually fall to the Heat. But long term, I don't know where Milwaukee goes. You know, tied up money in Chris Middleton, which, I mean, I wouldn't have done that move, but.
Yeah. I mean, he's good, but at that price, is he good?
he's not, you can't win with Middleton as your number two asset.
This goes back to the argument that popped up on Twitter about, you know, Giannis being a quote unquote Scottie Pippen. And I think maybe a lot of people said it, but Max Kellerman was the first person I heard to say it, you know, because they were like, you know, Giannis is a Scottie in search of a Jordan. And Kellerman was like, no, he's not a Pippen in search of a Jordan. He's a Shaq in search of a Kobe. Mm-hmm. In terms of the way, like, because Giannis, for as great as he is, Giannis is not the guy that's going to give you that nice mid-range shot or the guy that's going to hit that clutch three-pointer. Like, he's not that guy. He's not that wing. You know, he's a big. Even though he can play five positions, he's still a big, you know, and he needs that wing player. And, like, I feel like this offseason is going to be very crucial for Milwaukee. Because, like you said, Marcus, they don't have a ton of money, but they need to bring him in some help. I don't know if, like, your man Chris Paul ain't out here trying to get nobody no discounts, not even through State Farm. But I don't know if Chris Paul would take a discount to play with Giannis.
I mean, he's under contract. He's not taking. They'd have to trade him, and he's not. You can't. You know, the salary is what it is at this point.
Yeah, and that's I don't see. I don't see the Thunder taking back bad contracts. Like, that doesn't make sense for them.
Man, they're not taking Middleton. I mean, you know, you can convince.
Well, that's the other thing. Who do they have to give? Like, who do you want? Like, do you want the Lopez brothers? Is that who you're looking for on the Bucks if you're trying to make a trade? Like, they don't have a lot of assets either to give up
to the other team. They have no young assets that are worth.
No.
You know, White Dante is not going to turn your team around. They don't have those prospects that are maybe one or two seasons away. They just, you know, it's Giannis who's 25, and then you have a bunch of vets like Wesley Matthews and Lopez.
Bledsoe.
And Bledsoe, who's now 30. Korver, who's almost 50.
How important, because I know this was a narrative coming out of that series, Marcus, and this is a player that I like. I like his game, and I like, you know, just from seeing him play in the area. How important was Malcolm Brogdon to that team?
He was the second best player. I mean, I thought he was better than Middleton for what he did in that team, and that's where I don't get, you know, if you're appealing to Giannis and trying to sell him on the fact that, you know, the Bucks are in it for the long haul. We're trying to improve with you. And then you let Malcolm go to a team in your division in Indiana.
Yeah.
That's where I'm like, all right, well, you let this dude walk because of money, essentially. And he had some injury issues, but he was still pretty solid this year for the Pacers. And
yeah.
He was a guy that, you know, 27, could start at either point or the one or two guard, depending on if they wanted to do a Bledsoe, and you let him go.
Gives you perimeter defense.
Yeah, it's just that had to be sort of a tough pill for Giannis to swallow. And he's now eligible to sign the Supermax this offseason. I don't see him signing the Supermax before he hits free agency, because you're locking yourself in when you don't really know the direction of this franchise. And, you know, it's great to win 55, 60 games in regular season, but when Giannis wins the MVP, whenever that is, this month or next month, as you mentioned, it'll be a two-time MVP. I think there's only one other person that has won two MVPs and never made the NBA Finals. Nate, you know who that is?
Would that be the new coach of the Brooklyn Nets?
Ding, ding, ding. It would be. It would be Steve Nash.
But you're right, Marcus, because the NBA in particular is a sport where, yes, the individual accolades are great, but if you're a star player, sooner or later, you got to at least make a final, and you got to make, and even more so than that, you got to win a chip. And, mm-hmm. you know, LeBron went through it. Kobe went through it for a time period. Like, you can be great, but unless you have that team success, Kevin Durant might be the closest parallel to Giannis on this one, Marcus, where, like, yeah, if you can't win a chip with the guys you got, you might have to go out and get one somewhere else because your overall value as a player is judged in the NBA on team success more so than any other sport.
Yeah, I mean, look at Charles Barkley. I mean, that's still yep. still the joke about him is it's playful at this point, but the fact that Charles doesn't have a ring despite, you know, being a top 50 player. You don't – a lot of Giannis is 25, and there's definitely time to turn that around. But, you know, by the time LeBron was 25, he had made the finals with the Cavs. And granted, they got worked by the Spurs, but – he at least dragged that team to the finals.
And you knew, like, sooner or later, he's gonna get one. With Giannis, mm-hmm. like, if he stays in Milwaukee, what proof do I have, Marcus, that we've seen from this team? Like, oh, yeah, like, they didn't get it this year, but I know that team's got a championship in their future. I can't say that right now.
And that's where Toronto comes into play. Because during all this, it came out – Vinny Goodwill of Yahoo Sports reported that, you know, this discussion they've been going on in the bubble and the front runners so far, it seems like, are the Raptors and the Heat for mm-hmm. Giannis after the next season. And
I love the idea of Giannis in Toronto. I think that would be a nice fit.
You know, Masai Ujiri has been a longtime associate slash friend of Giannis, and I would not be surprised because of the bubble dynamics and having both of those teams, the Bucks and the Raptors, in the same hotel.
Yeah,
that I'm sure some conversations went on, just, you know, casual chat.
Masai walking around the corner with the Birdman hand rub.
Yeah, you know, I think we're going to hear after next season the impact of having the bubble mm-hmm. when it came to future free agency plans, of just having that time around a player and GMs finding ways around NBA protocols and NBA security to get time with players.
It would have been, Marcus, if we had like a show this entire postseason of, you know, like the one NBA bubble barbershop.
Mm-hmm.
If LeBron, like, because LeBron does the barbershop show anyway, like,
yeah,
do a special bubble edition. Like, that would have been crazy with all these guys kind of locked into the same location.
I'm sure they're filming something inside the bubble, but
that's a 30 for 30 we need down the road. The NBA bubble season.
Yeah. Speaking of the bubble, by the way, your man Daniel House.
Oh, well,
maybe this will be our segment four.
I'll say, yeah, we can say that for last because there are two more NBA things I want to get to. But before we leave the Bucks, I do want to say, like, yes, the team underachieved, and there will be decisions that they need to make off the court or on the court. But I do feel like we can't, you know, we can have jokes about them getting bounced from the bubble, but we do need to respect what they meant to the bubble, in particular, you know, 2 weeks ago when you talk about the players, you know, stopping and the Bucks kind of the catalyst for that. So I think even though on the court they're out of here with, you know, out of sight, out of mind, their impact on this NBA postseason is important.
Yeah. And who knows how much of a factor that would, you know, we don't know everyone was on board with the Bucks idea within the team. Like, we heard clearly after the fact that people were caught off guard. So one would imagine not everyone in that locker room wanted to do what they did. And who knows if that had impact on.
Like, why Dante, you bet not say nothing. when we call roll, oh, just
you know, White Dante was another cause.
White Dante was leading it. White, yeah. White Dante was like, come on, brothers. The Lopez twins just looking at him, just this Negro. Yeah. But yeah, Marcus, let's go to your neck of the woods. And you know, because the Bucks underachieved. And I don't want to go as far as to say underachieved when we talk about this team. What's going on with them Clippers, man?
Not looking great. Gotta be kind of nervous going into game seven. I mean, the fact that we're even getting to game seven is just, you know.
Yeah.
Denver has nothing to lose at this point.
Nothing. And absolutely nothing.
I would not be surprised if they won tomorrow night.
So you saying the Clippers might get a case of the lemon booty?
They've had two cases now. Lemon booty diarrhea at this point.
Just lemonade coming out the back end. That's a bad visual for the folks at home. But yeah, like I think like that clip that's been all over TV and the radio today of Doc Rivers just like, come on, guys, the refs aren't going to give it to you. You got to go out there and get it. Like, I feel like if the Clippers don't win, Marcus, I feel like there's going to be some big changes made. Like, speaking specifically about a Doc Rivers change, which I don't know is the right move.
I mean, who's going to?
Because you're not going to get rid of Paul. You're not going to get rid of Kawhi, obviously. Doc's the next guy.
Both of those guys. They came that way under the premise of 2 years, and then they'll explore their options. Kawhi can opt out after next season. I think Paul George has the same stipulation. So there's a chance if the Clippers don't win this year, and let's say they don't win next season, that this could be it. You could have one guy leave, or you could have both guys leave, and then at that point, you have traded all these draft picks away for Paul George.
Lord help him! Lord help him! The Lakers find a way to win the championship in one of those 2 years. Like that's gonna make Clippers fans go crazy, because it's like you had the opportunity right here.
Yeah.
All 10 of them?
Yeah, not a lot of Clipper fans out here.
Hey, man, so, Clipper Darryl's still out here fighting a good fight.
He is. God bless him. But I could see this. I don't see Doc getting canned just because, you know, D'Antoni's not going to get this team to a title. Like, there's only so many options out there for Hitch that you're not going to put a Steve Nash type.
I was just gonna say, like, I mean, you've already lost out on the Steve Nash sweepstakes, so
yeah, like, you know, Sam Cassell's not gonna take over this team and lead them to a title. So I think Doc is safe.
I mean, what about that man Ty Lue out there on these streets?
Yeah, no.
He got championships, Marcus. Or one championship.
Doc has done enough to buy him at least one more season.
Dr. Coach is, to me, Dr. Coach is bulletproof. Like, Dr. GM, that was a different story. And yeah, that was not a working situation. But I can't put the blame on the way the Clippers have played in this series on Doc Rivers. That, to me, that's on the players.
Yeah. And having it happen one time, you know, that's fine. Haha. Having it happen yesterday, the second time, that's where I'm like, okay, like, this team just might come out flat game seven. And
yeah,
it seems like once get behind, they just.
Because at one point they were up by, like, what was it, 20? Was that the highest the lead got?
I think it was 16 yesterday.
Okay.
16 or 18, yeah. And.
Which is crazy. You up 18 points and you have arguably the best player in the league. If not, he's certainly in the top two or three with Kawhi Leonard. And you still lose to the Denver Nuggets? And it's no shade on the Nuggets, Marcus. Like, the Nuggets are a good team. But again, they're a team that's probably a year away. And they don't care.
Yeah. It's going to be interesting game seven. And if the Nuggets do win,
do you think they could beat the Lakers?
Do I? No, I don't think so.
I mean, I'm blanking on his name, big fella.
Jokic?
Yes, yeah. That's a bad dude, Marcus. Like every time I listen to your man Jeff Van Gundy, he tells me he's the best big man in the game right now.
I think the Nuggets series would allow the Lakers to
match up better.
JaVale. Yeah, I mean they're at the point where JaVale McGee and Dwight wouldn't be playing against the Rockets, so they'll become more of a factor in trying to slow down the Nuggets. And then
you got playoff Rondo on these streets.
He's been incredible off the bench. Along with Caruso. Caruso's been great too.
Yeah.
And I think Denver just doesn't have enough weapons to keep up with the Lakers. Like Jamal Murray is great, but we've seen Jamal Murray not be great in the series. And
Jokic, I don't think,
and after that, dead. Paul Millsap, your boy, he's not.
Well, and here's the thing, Marcus. Here's where, again, like, and I don't want to take anything away from Kawhi Leonard, but to me, what puts LeBron in a different category is the fact that, and this is something LeBron had to learn because he didn't always have this, right? You think about, you know, those early Heat teams. Like when he first got to the Heat, he didn't have this kind of fight in him, at least not to my estimation. But like LeBron ain't going to let what happened to the Clippers the last two games, he wouldn't let that happen to the Lakers.
Oh, no.
Mm-hmm. LeBron would be like, nah, we're putting a stop to this quick, fast, in a hurry.
Yeah, no, there would be no blowing back-to-back leads like that. So I think either way, I think the Lakers are going to be the favorites in the next round, even if the Clippers advance. But I would, you know, I see the Lakers in the finals, and then I guess out of the East, I am leaning towards the Celtics.
Yeah, yeah. Your boys ain't around no more, Marcus. Toronto knocked out. Who matches up better? Who matches up better?
With the Lakers?
Yeah.
The Celtics probably do.
Yeah, because I kind of like, just for the narrative, I want to see Miami and L.A. Because you've got, you know, the LeBron connection, Spo, you know, former coach Pat Riley, of all people, you know, being involved with the Heat organization. I think from a TV standpoint, if I'm TV, that's who I want, is Miami and L.A.
TV on Celtics. You got the
Yeah. My bad. Yeah. We got the classic rivalry. But I think from a story perspective, Miami, L.A. is more fascinating.
Yeah, I think Miami's still maybe one year away. But especially with Hayward coming back sometime this round.
Yeah.
I think the Celtics have the better team.
It'd be nice to see Kimba in the finals. That's a dude I feel has been underrated pretty much his entire career because of the damn Hornets.
Yeah. So he's been pretty bad. He was pretty bad at the Raptors series. I mean, they won in spite of Kimba, not because of him.
But yeah, Marcus, so let's before we get to our segment four, let's talk about real quick the Rockets. Because what's the Rockets got to do, man? Because another disappointing exit for the greatest offensive player in the history of basketball, as I've been told by the people in the media. What's next for Houston?
Well, a new coach. That's the first thing. Because D'Antoni is not coming back.
Yep.
And, Sam Cassell has been already tossed out there as a possible replacement. Same issue as the Bucks. The money is going to hamper what they can really do. And I think that's why you saw them trade Capella, because having your backcourt make $40-plus million each for the next 4 years makes it really restrictive in terms of what you can pay guys like a Clint Capella, who got his money from the Hawks. I think they are, I don't think it's They're not going to take a huge step back, but I still don't know if they have enough to get over that hump in the playoffs. I think they're very similar to Milwaukee in that sense. I mean, Houston, for the last, under D'Antoni, has been a great regular season team. And when it comes to the playoffs, when the action slows down, when their early bench becomes even shorter, they just haven't found a way to really win.
Yeah, it's tough because, like you said, they can't make a whole lot of moves given that salary. And maybe even more daunting than that is I feel like the West might be even better next year where you – because I think, like, the Lakers team we see next year, regardless of whether this Lakers team wins the championship or not, the team we see next year will probably be a better all-around team. Denver's going to be better. Utah is going to be better. Golden State, oh my goodness, Golden State might be back with a vengeance. So I feel like whatever whatever window Houston may or may not have had, it is certainly smaller than it was. Yeah. So speaking of Houston, Marcus Vandenberg.
Yes.
Let's talk about the house party.
House party 5. What did we cut out?
I'm trying to think. Yeah, I know we got to 3, so I don't know if there was a 4. So yeah,
wasn't
maybe this
the 4th one with the dude from Immature.
Oh, that's right. That's right. They did. Now, let's see. House party cinematic universe.
Marcus Houston. Yeah.
Yeah. All right. So the house party series. I bet you they put some more out like straight to DVD. All right, so there was House Party 2 in 91, House Party 3 in 94, House Party 4 starring Immature, House Party 4 Down to the Last Minute.
Oh, there was a 5.
House Party 5 was House Party Tonight's the Night starring Taquan Richmond.
And it did feature Kid and Play, at least, so.
I mean, at this point, like, if you're Kid and Play, why not pick up the check for a cameo?
Yeah, so House Party 6.
Yeah, apparently they, wow, apparently they're trying to get a House Party 6 going, Marcus.
No one asked for that.
Somebody did ask for that. LeBron James, along with his Spring Hill Entertainment partner, Maverick Carter, will be producing a new House Party film with Stephen Glover and Jamal Ullery writing the screenplay. It's not a reboot. It's a new look for a classic movie. James said, it's unknown if Kid and Play will appear in the film. They will, if the check is right. However, rapper Drake could appear as a cameo along with LeBron James himself. So this was back in 2018. So this is pre-Rona. So who knows if Rona affected production. But as of 2 years ago, LeBron James was out here trying to make House Party 6, Marcus Vandenberg. Wow. So maybe Daniel House will get a cameo now.
Maybe. But Daniel House was...
Maybe that's what they're filming right now in the bubble.
Right now?
House Party 6, Trouble in the Bubble.
He was removed from the bubble for allegedly having a woman in his room for multiple hours, which is a violation of the campus protocols. So,
not just any woman, Marcus Vandenberg.
She was one of the testers. She was one of the coronavirus testers.
Which I guess that's a good alibi if you're trying to craft a lie on the spot. Like, she was just testing me. She was checking my forehead.
Yeah. We should point out that Daniel House is married. And that brings into a whole different layer of this conversation of he's that a wife, not only at home, but a wife that he could have invited to the bubble at this point.
Yes. And, yeah, that's the biggest thing. Like, I get maybe she wanted to stay. If they got kids, maybe she wanted to stay at home with the kids or whatever. But yeah, like if you're going to be messing around with any woman in the bubble, it should be the woman that you're married to, Daniel House.
Yes. Who knows what happened inside the hotel room, but that's really not the point.
She was giving a PowerPoint presentation on coronavirus, baby. I swear. She was letting me know how I could prevent the spread of COVID.
Yeah, I mean, they could have just been hanging out, but
could have just been talking. It's like the R. Kelly, the Mr. Big. I could be just talking to her. What the hell is going on between the sheets and in my home?
Yeah.
But yeah, like that's the what would you call it, Marcus? The cherry on top of the sundae of the Rockets experience the past couple weeks.
Well, that's the thing. He's not a slouch. Like, he was a key part of that team.
Yeah.
And, you know, Rockets won game one. The incident happened between games one and two. He for game two, and then it was all downhill for the Rockets.
Everybody said LeBron was on the snitch hotline.
Well, no one snitched. I mean, they were able to pick up some type of something with the door, I think I said, but let me grab one. Hold on.
See, in my mind, like since Chris Paul's been eliminated, in my mind, Chris Paul is just like patrolling. He's top flight security of the world now in the bubble, and he's making sure everything's on the up and up.
So these are Magic bands, and as you can see on the camera. And these are the things that the players are wearing as room keys. But inside these things, there
hold
are
on, hold on, RFID time chip. Out, time out. Let's, yeah. Ladies and gentlemen, look, hold that up for the camera, Marcus, for everybody watching the video. This is how many times Marcus Vandenberg been at that Disney World establishment. He has a collage, a piece of art of Disney bands.
Yeah.
Probably dating back to 1996.
No, I only started going 6 years ago. 2014.
And he's already. I'm surprised that's not a diorama in Simba's crib. Someday, son. Someday.
Inside these bands are RFID chips, and you know, they tell you, "Oh, these chips are not used to track you. They're just used to." So what they're good for is, say if you don't ignite, and we'll say Small World, for example. At the end of Small World, they're able to read your chip, and they can display your name that says, like, goodbye, Nate.
Okay.
And because they're reading the chip.
Right.
But you can also, you know, entrap people and see where exactly they are. And it would not surprise me if they're able to see where this woman was in correlation to his room.
So now I'm just imagining like a big control room in the bubble with Chris Paul scoping people out. He's like, Mickey, any update on Daniel House? Oh, he's got somebody in the room. Oh, we've got a breach.
Yeah.
So yeah, like that's crazy. Like, okay, Disney, does that make you any less secure next time you go to the Magic Kingdom, Marcus, knowing they out here watching you?
No, I don't watch all you want.
as long as I can get on Splash Mountain.
I mean, your phone's also tracking you. If you ever looked in, like, I think Google Maps, like Google Maps plots every location you go to. So
I mean, your phone listens to you. If you ever go to your email, like there are personalized responses based on the
Instagram.
Way you.
Yeah.
Yes. Yep.
That mic is on, whether you know it or not. So
it's the government, man.
You know, the mouse tracking how many Dole Whips I've had today doesn't really bother me.
So that's the latest on the NBA bubble, but this is a crazy week, Marcus, where we got baseball, football, basketball, wrestling for the wrestling fans out there listening. So there's no excuse if you're a fan of sports or sports entertainment not to find something to watch this week.
Yeah, WNBA playoffs, MLS is still going on, NHL.
Oh, shout out to Naomi Osaka for winning the U.S. Open. I was hoping it would be her and Serena, but unfortunately Serena didn't make it to the final, but at least Naomi won because she's been repping Black Lives Matter all week and having names of people that were killed or through police brutality on her mask during the week. So and she's really good, Marcus. Like she's the future, and we're watching her now. If you're watching tennis at all,
yeah, that's her third major title. She's only 23, I believe.
And she beat Serena for one of them, didn't she?
She did. That was the infamous Serena. Mm. I'm going to watch how I phrase that because I don't want to get yelled at. But
whatever you do, don't draw a cartoon about it, Marcus.
No. But the French Open, which was postponed in a couple weeks. So that's the next major coming up. And then
who was the on the men's side, who was the brother that got kind of deep in the tournament? Because I was flipping through the channels and saw a black dude playing at the U.S. Open. And I was like, huh. You're new.
Tiafino? Francis Tiafino?
Yes. I don't think I've ever seen him play. And I was just like, oh, it's a because here's the thing, Marcus. Whenever I see a black man playing tennis now, like for the last 3 years, I just automatically assume it's Gael Monfils. It's like, did Monfils do something with his hair? But I was like, no, this is a new brother. So has he been around for a while? Or is this kind of his coming out
part? No, he's been around for a little bit.
Yeah, because I've never seen a dude. So yeah, shout out to Naomi Osaka. And then I guess last little news and note, Marcus, since this is like going around the wide world of sports according to black people, because our last story is Dateline NASCAR. Because your man Bubba Wallace, almost said Bubba Watson, Bubba Wallace is parting ways amicably with the Richard Petty team.
Yeah. Some more news to come about that, it sounds like.
Mm.
In a good way, not in a bad way, but you know, he's leaving number 43 and you know, he'll have a home in 2021.
Yeah, which I mean, like, it's great to have, like, and in that moment where Richard Petty hugged Bubba, like, that was cool and everything. But we talked about it the last time we talked about Bubba Wallace, like, that team wasn't going to win. Like, I believe they only run the 43 car. Like, they ain't got no other cars. And so it's like, you're not going to win if you're not spending the money to have comparable equipment to everybody else. So, right, like, we don't really know how good a driver Bubba Wallace is because we've never seen him on an even field with the other drivers.
Yeah.
So I'm hoping
next year will be a good year for him.
Yeah, I'm hoping he gets on with a good team. And, shout out to Richard Petty for standing up for the brother. And again, like I said, Marcus, it sounds like this was an amicable split for the team. Because it's not like he's leaving with dates to fill still on his contract, right? His contract was coming up. And he's just like, I'm not going to renew it.
Yeah.
So, yeah, shout out to Bubba. Hopefully next season will be a better season for him. That's gonna do it, Marcus. Unless you got any more Disney souvenirs you want to show to people.
Madam Leota, no, I'll stop.
that's a separate. We'll set up a show on the Patreon. Marcus does Disney, where Marcus just shows all his Disney collectibles.
Rare rabbit.
One of these days, Marcus, like one of these days when like nothing's going on in sports, we will have to like do a live watch a Song of the South.
Yeah,
if we can find it without putting money in white supremacist pockets.
Well, that's always the battle.
That's always the battle. So if you're out there and you have a copy of Song of the South, first of all, why are you listening to this show? But second of all, let us know so we can, Marcus and I can watch it and talk about it. Yes. But yeah, unless you got anything else, brother, we'll call it a show.
No, that's it.
So let the good people know where they can find you, brother, on social media, and you know, check out your thoughts on the world out there, particularly as we could be, you know, if Doc gets them boys straight for Game 7, we could be heading to an all-LA Western Conference final.
Yeah, you can find me on social media at Mark Browill, MarcoWill.
You can find me on Twitter at N8, MozaiK, at Nate Mosaic. Check out the Twitter for the show, KOSPOD, KOS_POD, Patreon, patreon.com/KingsOfSport. We're still doing, for any new patrons this month, we're still donating the money from the Patreon to the Jackie Robinson Foundation, the Thurgood Marshall College Fund, and the American Cancer Society in honor of Chadwick Boseman, in honor of his memory. So, yeah, you can check out the Patreon. Facebook.com/KingsOfSport. And, yeah, this is our first time trying out this this StreamYard gimmick, so we'll see how it works. But I think this might end up being the new way to go, Marcus.
Yeah, so far so good. I like it.
Yeah, so thank you for checking out the show, whether you're watching on Patreon or whether you're listening on your regular podcast application of choice. But, yeah, I think that is going to do it. We'll be back probably next week, where we'll actually have an NBA final that we can talk about, maybe, possibly.
No, the following week.
Be the following week?
Well, that's the conference finals will start on Friday.
That's probably when who are we kidding, Marcus? That's probably when we'll be back next time anyway. So the next time you hear us, we may or may not be previewing the NBA finals. But yeah, this has been a fun show. It's good to have football back. I wasn't excited at all for college, Marcus, but I actually got into a lot of the NFL games yesterday.
So did I. And the college had a little better this past Saturday. And then we're still 2 weeks away from SEC. And then it sounds like the Big Ten will be back in October. So we're getting there.
We're getting there, but I'll tell you what I don't need with college football, Marcus.
What's that?
And ESPN, I'm singling you out. What I don't need is ESPN today talking about Trevor Lawrence making his bid for the Heisman. I know. It's too soon for all that.
Yeah. Never too soon.
Not to mention there's whole conferences of players who aren't even playing.
Wow. That's on them.
That's gonna do it. Thanks for watching. Thanks for listening. We'll be back next time with an all new episode of the world's most dangerous sports show, the Kings of Sport podcast. So, for Marcus Vandenberg, I am the Godfather Nate Milton. Sing a song full of the faith that the dark past has taught us. Sing a song full of the hope that the present has brought us. Facing the rising sun of our new day begun, let us march on till victory is won. Maybe that'll be a homework assignment for the listeners. Like, send in video of you singing Lift Every Voice and Sing in solidarity with the show for next time.
Yes.
Because you've been down with the Kings.
Lift every voice and sing till earth and heaven ring. Ring with the harmony of liberty. Let our
wide, wide world of sports is going on here.
Well, that's all for this week's edition of the Kings of Sport. Be sure to come back next week for an all-new episode. You can leave feedback for the show on Twitter at KOS_POD or via Gmail at thekingsofsport@gmail.com. Don't forget to like and rate us on iTunes and tell a friend. The Kings of Sport is a production of the Mosaic Podcast Network.
Whether you like it or not, he's back. D-A-double-D-Y, that's ass.
Let me tell you something, Mean Gene. I'm going to go out there and I'm going to leave it all on the mat. Because that's what I do when I get it done so I can do it. Yeah! I'm on a new level.